Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. You can hear a little head cold in there. I'll tell you, I just can't shake this thing. It's unbelievable. So pardon the little stuffiness. Hey, welcome to today's edition of Education Talk Radio as I abruptly turn the music off. It's a pleasure to have you here today. Also a pleasure to have my guests, good friends. Okay, Desi Bowling is here, our good friend from the Kentucky Valley Educational Co-op, that wonderful ESA down in eastern Kentucky. And she's brought with her Kim Sargent, who is a If I've got this right, she's a teacher, I believe, in Letcher, Kentucky schools, but works as the social studies instructional specialist for the Kentucky Valley Ed Co-op. And we'll find out from Kim those details. We're going to talk about the work they're doing with another good friend of ours, which is the Driving Force Institute for Public Engagement, and the work they're doing in social studies. And I know Pat Ricard's at the Driving Force Institute separately from Desi, and much to my surprise, all of a sudden he mentioned how he was working with KVEC, who we work with all the time. Before you know it, we had this show put together, so it's great to have the two folks that I work with on the same show, though I didn't know they even knew each other, so it's great this all came about. Pat was going to be with us today. He's stuck in an emergency room with his son, so I hope everything's all right there, and I'm sure it will be, and we're going to get him back on. Probably not on this show. We probably won't be back in time, but we'll get him next week or the week after and have him talk more about the Driving Force Institute and their role in all this. Maybe we'll even bring Desi and Kim back on too when the time is right. But for today, we're just going to work with Desi and Kim. We are now part here at Education Talk Radio of the American Consortium for Equity in Education. That's at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. The new issue of our magazine, our online journal, Equity and Access, will be up on site today. All right, it's not there yet. I have seen it. It's being uploaded onto ace-ed.org. And I just want to point you to there's a huge ad on page 50 for the Kentucky Valley Educational Cooperative and some of the things they're doing. And there's also an ad in there all about Driving Force Institute. So we work very closely with these groups. They do wonderful work in equity. And I hope you'll go over, join our consortium for equity. Okay, it's free for educators over at ace-ed.org. We're trying to get everybody involved to get a place where equity really, really matters. And we publish our magazine over there, all our podcasts are over there, the schedule and everything we've done with them, ace-ed.org. And again, pardon my cold and scratchy voice. Okay, let's bring on Desi and Kim. We'll start with my old pal, Desi. Good morning, Desi.
Good morning, Larry. And how are you today, besides a little bit of a head cold?
A little bit of a cold or something is going on today. So I feel like I sound nasally. Do I sound a little different? I feel nasally.
You sound perfect. Thank you, my dear.
Thank you, my dear. Always supportive. Yeah. And I'm sure Kim will say the same thing. Kim, how do I sound today, even though you have nothing to compare that to, more than likely?
Well, actually, I do, because I'm a pretty big fan. I really enjoyed your podcast with Sarah Anderson about place-based education a little while back. So I'm a big fan,
actually. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'll send you an 8x10 glossy of myself. I appreciate that.
Great.
Don't be surprised if it looks almost exactly like Brad Pitt. I'll cross out his signature and put on mine. Is that okay?
That's great. That's great.
See, that's why I do radio. I got the face for radio. Kim, it's a pleasure to have you here, okay? And thanks so much for being here. And did I get that right? It seems to me you're a teacher in the Letcher, Kentucky schools, but you work with KVEC in social studies. How close am I to the actual facts there?
Well, you're hitting right all around it. I am I'm on MOA, which means basically that I'm on loan from Letcher County Schools to KVEC, and so I am the regional instructional specialist for social studies.
Cool. Right.
Yes.
So you're not teaching
Very
this
cool.
year?
No. I've been out of the classroom for a little bit. But I work very closely with classrooms throughout the region, yeah. So I'm still working with teachers. That's my, you know, students and teachers are my number one priority, and especially as they implement our new standards in Kentucky.
Absolutely. And by the way, I'm an old social studies teacher.
Awesome. I knew it.
And it was a lot easier to teach when I was teaching, okay, because it was a lot less history.
Yeah, it grows a whole lot every day, doesn't it?
Yeah, we're the only ones. It was out there, you know, with social studies and history teachers are the only ones that have more to teach every year. Okay?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. The math doesn't have to do this. You know, that kind of thing. So, you know, English, they don't do it. Dickens isn't going to write more novels. You know? But social studies, okay,
absolutely.
We get more stuff every year. You know, it's just absolutely incredible. Welcome to the show. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you're here today. I'll start with Desi. Desi, and again, Pat's not here. Go to Driving Force Institute, everybody. Their stuff is amazing. DrivingForceInstitute.org. And Pat and I have done several shows together, but he may make it here today, but I doubt it. Okay, so we'll get him on next week to talk about that further. Okay, but Desi, how did you and how did KVAC and Driving Force Institute find each other? Well, how'd that come about?
Well, that was all due to Kim. And when we talk about the teachers here at KVAC and those people that are on MOA, that's what we do here at KVAC. We try to find the absolute best teachers in all of the 23 districts that we serve, and then we try to entice them to come here to KVAC to provide guidance and help and assistance to all the teachers across this region. And so we were very fortunate whenever Kim joined our team here at KVAC with social studies. And we had met Patrick, and she had introduced me to Patrick on a Zoom call. And so we just got this work going. But yeah, it's all due to her efforts.
Right, that is great. Kim, you want to talk about it further?
What happened?
Go ahead. Just talk. How'd you meet Pat? How'd you find out about Driving Force Institute? How'd you get it together with KVAC? Go ahead.
Well, I think one thing that happened is that some of the work that we had been doing with the census, there was a pilot program that we designed with the census folks, and we actually did with our students at KVAC's Fall Summit. So when we did that, and that was pretty heavily advertised and that kind of thing, plus we had been doing a great deal of place-based education. You know, I had been doing that with many of the social studies teachers in our region.
I love that.
So, yes. And so when that kind of got out there, we ended up on Driving Force Institute's radar, and Pat, we just kind of started the conversation, and it just grew from there. So it was phenomenal. We're very fortunate, especially for the resources and everything that the Driving Force Institute has, you know, this is going to be a tremendous addition to KVAC and to how we're supporting our teachers.
But how did you make it Kentucky-oriented? Okay. This is your project is called Untold Kentucky. Okay. Mm-hmm. And how did you put that together? This is really cool.
Well, one of the partners one of the partners that works with Driving Force Institute is McMatic, and there is this one segment of their stories that is called Untold. And so they go into those stories that are not often revealed. You know, those stories, I think, that sometimes are really the best examples. They kind of almost become an exemplar of those moments in history, and they get deeper because it's the human story, you know. So in this case, when we were talking to Pat was like, you know, in one of our conversations, he says, tell me some of those stories that not everybody knows about Kentucky. And I think that, you know, that shows vision on the part, especially of Pat and Driving Force Institute. So when we started telling him, especially stories about Eastern Kentucky, because when you start talking about, you know, Appalachian Kentucky, there's a lot of things, because I think so often our narrative has been created by others, and it's not been our story. And I think what's great thing about this project with Untold Kentucky, I think one thing about that is rather refreshing for me is that we're taking back that narrative, you know, most importantly. But I think, you know, in telling our story, we're telling a story that other people can look to and say, oh, my gosh, that's just like us. And it brings us back, I think, in many respects. There's moments in Kentucky, especially Eastern Kentucky, when we have been very much part of a national narrative. You know, so often when you think of Eastern Kentucky, and I don't even like to say these things out loud, but you start, because these are the stories you always think of. You think of, you know, the Hatfield and McCoys, or you think of, you know, some of the labor movements, you know, and things like that in the 1930s. And those have become stories that are just told often and repeated, but there's so much more to who we are. So this whole aspect of Untold Kentucky, as we started telling Patrick these stories, he said, oh, my gosh, this is it. These are the stories that we want. So I think that the untold stories that we are telling are those stories that people will connect with on a much deeper and much richer level.
That's true. And by the way, I want everybody to know that neither Kim or Desi are wearing overalls that stop above their ankles, chewing a piece of straw, and wearing a straw hat. I know that for a fact. Okay?
Yeah.
They are, Greg.
That's
so
exactly
you know.
Right, yes.
Thank you for that. But you're absolutely right. There is a stereotype. You're absolutely
mm-hmm.
correct there.
Right.
Okay, and
right.
it's time for everyone to understand that. I think most people do. Okay,
right.
But the most important is for the students to understand
yes.
the area to understand that. Okay,
mm-hmm.
that stereotype, even though they don't live it every day, they have to understand exactly what the history was. I think that's just that's just a great thing all the way around. Now, this is going
mm-hmm.
to use, and something I don't understand. They're going to use video to improve
mm-hmm.
the teaching of history in Kentucky. Okay,
mm-hmm.
How do you do the video? Is the video old archived footage, or is the video new footage? What are you going to do? What is the actual physical project?
Well, that's where it gets really interesting. That this is actually my favorite part, and this is something that Desi and a bunch of my friends here at KVEC, because listen, we have almost the whole staff on board with this, because as we produce these videos, you know, we bring people in and say, what do you think about this? And we get lots of perspective.
Yes.
But what
yes.
happens?
Right.
Well, MakeMatic, this is the beauty of it. MakeMatic comes in and they take the information that we give them. We create, we bring all these sources and, you know, together that tells a story, you know, primary and secondary. And we bring these things together. And when the script writers get involved, they, you know, they're understanding the whole story and they consult with us the entire time in the creation of the script, because it is our story. Patrick is very, and so is Matt, you know, MakeMatic. They're very serious about this. This is your story.
Mm-hmm.
So you tell it. So we're part of that whole process in the script writing. Well, then when it comes to the visual ends up being about a 90 to 120 second video, because it's the whole idea is to set up the idea, is to tell that one micro story in that moment,
yeah,
because it's
yeah.
ideally going to lead to a bigger story and a bigger investigation. So as it does this, it's completely animated, and it's animated by these phenomenal artists and animators through MakeMatic. And when they take these images that we send them, or they interpret these stories and they create these images, it's absolutely, I think the thing that's the most fascinating about it is that, you know, you would think that it, because it's a cartoon, if you think of the audience,
yeah.
which is like, let's say, upper elementary through high school, you're like, oh my gosh,
yeah.
it's animation. But here's the thing, you know, I have a daughter that's you know, going to be 17 next month, and she still, that kind of thing still catches her attention. It catches our attention. I mean,
hello.
Think about how we love Schoolhouse Rock. Yeah.
Yeah, I only wish
yeah.
you guys the money that Disney made from Frozen.
Mm-hmm.
That was animated,
oh.
too. And
yes.
Shrek, that was animated.
Yes.
And Soul
yes.
on Disney now.
Yeah.
That was animation. Animation is
yes.
as good as normal acting, if I may, normal action. So, yeah, you don't
have
to tell anybody how important and how wonderful animation is these days.
Yeah.
Okay,
exactly.
You don't have to convince
yeah.
anyone of that. All right.
Yeah.
And actually, what you're able to do with animation is far greater, because you have total
mm-hmm.
creativity than what you could do with the real life sets and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And
yeah.
and if I may, and Desi, I don't mean to leave you out. I'm letting Kim do the talking. Is that okay?
Oh, well, that's fine. And you know, and that the reason that we felt so strongly about doing this program and this work was that, as you know, at KVEC, that's what we're all about. It's about
yeah.
helping people to recognize the value of what's good about living in rural America. And one of the things that we realized
right.
a long time ago was that we needed to shift that narrative from everybody being in overalls to what was really good. And so that's what we've been working on. And one of the things that I always tell people is that we in rural America, we're all more alike than we are different. And
yes.
so when we're showcasing all of the good things and the positive things about being in rural America, and we want to make other folks in other rural areas look at that and say, well,
mm-hmm.
you know, we have these things too. And so
yep.
how do we all come together so that we can show people that good things happen in rural America, the living is good in rural America, and then really look at the connecting
and the
place.
Is
and all, yeah, that's
funny.
Right. And,
that's
and,
funny. Well,
and,
I remind
yeah.
you, and this is a key thing, okay? Rural America is the lifeblood of the
mm-hmm.
country. I'm going to say that
exactly.
right off the bat. And we are history
exactly.
teachers, okay? This country
mm-hmm.
was a rural agrarian nation.
Yes.
That's
yes.
where its roots have been, okay, since it was founded.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Yes.
And,
absolutely.
You know, we may move to cities, but it's like Alex Haley roots. The roots are always there.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So you have to understand, and I live in rural Maine, okay? So you have
mm-hmm.
to understand, you know, if we don't all get together on this stuff and understand each other, it's not about cities,
yeah.
it's about people no matter where they are. And that's
yes.
key stuff, and to have pride in where you are, et cetera. So I still have to ask this. Who – what? Give me an example of a video, okay, and how that one was put together.
Oh,
okay?
Okay, this is,
and in
yes.
other words, so people understand to kind of get a pinpointed idea of what we're talking about.
Well, I think Desi is going to know which one, because several of these, all of these, I love. But there's four
oh, yeah.
or five that are very specific to Eastern Kentucky. And one of those that I absolutely, I mean, it became a passion project. And that was the story of bluegrass, the history of bluegrass.
Oh, wow.
And,
wow.
you know, sometimes when you think about bluegrass music, it's like, okay, yeah, there's some banjos, guitars, and that's great, they're talented,
oh,
move
no.
on.
Definitely.
But here's the thing, is that there's not only a story of who we are as a people and as a culture, as a state, by the way, because the father of bluegrass is actually from Western Kentucky. So you've got,
okay.
you know, so you have Bill, yeah.
Who do you consider,
Bill Monroe.
Who's the, wait a minute, yeah, since you, who is the father of bluegrass?
That would be Bill Monroe. He is the father in Arkansas.
Thank you.
And
okay.
so,
thank
yes.
you.
So what
I,
happens?
I,
yeah, absolutely.
I know Bill Monroe, of course, but I wanted to make sure we were all on the same wavelength of who the father was. I didn't have to, but didn't have to want to go through a DNA test, you know, to find out the paternity. So, okay, Bill Monroe. Thank you very much. Everybody knows Bill Monroe. Now we'll move on. Go ahead.
Yes.
So,
yes.
go ahead.
So when we started investigating this and researching it, where do you go but to the School of Bluegrass, and that's in Hyden, Kentucky? So
my hometown.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, and she can tell you, and I would love for her to talk about the School of Bluegrass, but I just want to say, like, when
wow.
I went over and met Dean Osborne, and that is someone that Desi hooked us up with, the minute that we saw that we were going to be doing the story of bluegrass, because we had a team of teachers who were working with us, and we went through a list of topics, because believe me, when you sit down and talk to, and you know this all too well, Larry, when you sit down with a bunch of history folks, we can think of everything. So we had this gargantuan whiteboard
yeah.
with post-it notes all over
mm-hmm.
it, everything
yeah.
that we could talk
yeah.
about from Eastern Kentucky. And we had to be pretty economical about it, so we had to cut it down to 10. And then when you do Eastern Kentucky, because we were doing Kentucky and Eastern Kentucky, you know, collectively. So then we
mm-hmm.
sit down with those top, you know, four topics, and bluegrass made it, because I think that people don't really understand its, you know, its complexity, so to speak. So anyway, so I go over to the school and I spend 2 hours there and was just absolutely amazed and floored.
Yeah,
most of all, I left there, you know, really proud. I left there genuinely moved. You know, there was just times that tears would actually well up in my eyes when I would hear
sure.
about how people would come from around the world and they would come here to
yep.
learn more about bluegrass. So, Desi, I'm going to let you talk
wow.
a little bit about the school itself and Dean.
Do it, Desi, your hometown. My hometown.
Oh, yes. Well, the Bluegrass School of Music was put in Hyden, Kentucky through the local Hazard Community College. And it's they've had students from Japan and every place. And so Dean Osborne, who's a nephew of Bobby and Sonny Osborne, runs the school. And Bobby Osborne is actually an instructor there. And so Bobby and Sonny's father taught school in the old Hyden Elementary building. So it has a lot of history like that. And I've known Dean for several years. And in fact, I'll share this. When Bill and Melinda Gates came to visit KVEX area to see the great things taking place in the schools,
wow,
we actually had dinner. Yeah, they did. And so we
wow.
had dinner with them at a local restaurant, and
wow.
I asked Dean, because they wanted to have, you know, music. So I asked Dean if he would bring, you know, a few of his students to that restaurant and play for Bill and Melinda Gates, and he did. And so they were just blown away. And so what I have tried to do is just to, you know, promote our School of Bluegrass, because you know, it's just
yeah, yeah.
people don't know what they don't know.
Mm-hmm,
and so we
mm-hmm.
have so many great things. And then
yeah.
when this opportunity came and I told Kim, I said, I'll go over, and we went over, and we actually filmed some B-roll, and I'll tell one great story. We met, so when we went in, and Dean was in the back. He was in the back doing a lesson, and he came out, and with him came a gentleman, and he looked at me, and I told Dean what we were doing, and that gentleman said, I am so glad that you all are doing this. He said, we need this in our schools. He said, I'm 75 years old, and I'm taking guitar lessons. He said, I learned a little bit of music from my mother and my grandmother when I was young. He said, and I've worked in the mines all these years. He said, and I am now retired, and I'm taking guitar lessons. He said, thank you so much for doing this work so that kids can have access to it. And that just touched my heart. And so Dean totally agreed to be part of our project.
Yes.
And what was your dinner like with Bill and Melinda? Did they mention they owe me money?
Oh, they didn't.
Couple of million.
But we'll go see them if you want to.
Please mention my name. Yeah, I loaned them a couple of million to get them started, and I never heard a word from them. I was wondering what happened. Obviously, it worked out.
Well, that figures that people get rich and they forget us. That's it.
Right. I never have. Even with all my money, I never have. There you are. Okay. And well, I didn't know about the Bill and Melinda Gates thing. I'm like flabbergasted here, and I have to tell you. Okay, so congratulations
on
that.
Tiny,
I hope they picked up the tab.
Project.
Did they pick up the tab for
they
dinner?
Did.
I hope so.
They
oh,
did.
Thank God.
Yes, they did. Uh-huh. Yes.
It wasn't like one of these where
tiny,
Bill picked up the tab and said, you had the hamburger, and Kim had the steak. It wasn't one of those deals. Okay, cool. Just checking.
No,
by the way, I have to tell you, the
did,
Kentucky
did
School of Bluegrass, I'm on the website. Just Google it, everybody. Okay,
yeah,
and if it wasn't for COVID, my son, who's a graduate of Berklee College of Music in Boston, would probably be down there in the next week. Okay, because he just loves bluegrass. I love it too, but we see a lot of it up here when there were places to go see it. Okay, before COVID, and wow, this is incredible! Kentucky School of Music, Kentucky School of Bluegrass, everybody. Thanks for mentioning that. It's a little aside from what we're doing here. So this is great. So now you got the video, the animation. How are the teachers using it, Kim? What's going on? What are you hearing? Talk about getting it out there.
Well, we're bringing the whole project together. We're almost to the end. We're almost to the finish line, and we're getting ready to release it to the teachers very shortly. But most importantly, that's going to be layered is how we're going to produce that or bring that out to them. What happens is that we're going to support them. We're going to the scaffold bringing this learning in by most importantly, we have a media literacy series that's going to be also taken out to the teachers at the same time. Because, you know, all too often when people think of us social studies teachers, Larry, they think, oh, they stick in videos and they just let it play and they'll let somebody else do their job. That's not it at all.
That's right.
You have
to
interact.
Right. Yep.
And the beauty of these videos, so they're 2 minutes long, you're going to put them in. And some people are like, just 2 minutes? It's like, yeah, because this is about instigating an investigation.
Exactly.
So it's about putting that in there, getting the thinking sparking. And another thing I love about each of these videos is that they end with a question. And that question is going to drive further inquiry, media, such as podcasts. Hello, sitting here on a podcast, and I didn't even think about it. So bringing in podcasts, bringing in social media, bringing in other types of websites, so that as you investigate these things with the students, you're going to be learning more, which then takes us to the next layer that I was talking about, which is we're also going to build inquiry around these. Like, for instance, one of the Cold Wars in Harlan County. So, you know, because sometimes people, when they talk about Harlan County, they talk about Bloody Harlan. And,
of course,
you know, there's, you know, focus for us in the story. The focus is for us is all the intricacies of the strike, why it happened, who was impacted, that kind of thing. Also, who lived in those communities, who was working, who was in power. So in order for the students to learn about that, you've got to create inquiries around that and ask those supporting questions that lead to answering that big compelling question. So this is actually going to be layered, but the big thing I'm excited about is the media literacy series that we're also going to be rolling out with this. It's good because teachers, like I said, sometimes they don't bring in social media or podcast or other things because they're it's a little intimidating because there's so much content they feel, so much curriculum that they want to do this, you know, this march through it. And they're like, I can't bring in anything else. This has got my focus. But in reality, we're going to show them how they bring these things in and how it creates that robust learning experience for the students. It's going to be hopefully a whole lot less intimidating.
It's just fabulous. And let me get – I have to say something since you brought it up. The old social studies teacher keeps popping out in me like it will always do with you guys. All right. And,
yeah.
You know, you talk about the Harlan Coal Wars. That's C-O-A-L, everybody. Okay. The Harlan Coal Wars. And they were very violent. Okay. And there's a whole history of violence and of unionization, et cetera, of the coal mines through West Virginia and Kentucky. Everybody kind of knows that. But that violence grows out of frustration, okay?
Yeah.
And I don't like violence, and nobody likes violence. But you can take that and make it that history as important today by what happened at the Capitol just a few weeks ago, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When people have pent up frustration, I'm not advocating this, okay?
Yeah.
We have challenges, and we have to learn how to divert that frustration. And make sure that we don't forget about people, okay, and understand what their concerns are. And that's what you can learn from the Harlan County Coal Wars and make it as relevant today as you want to.
Yes.
It's that simple.
I think so, too. And I think also something else is coming out of this project for me, and this is something I talk about with teachers a great deal, is that all too often because our history has become so sanitized, we have this, you know, we have this curriculum, we have the scope and sequence, we have our pacing guide, we're going to go through that, we've got to make sure that we hit the highlights, and we're not telling those little stories, we're not telling those untold stories, and I think that it's when these stories become so sanitized and, you know, so shelved, you know, and siloed into specific areas, that when you hear history on the local level and it tells the human story, And in that humanization of the story, that's where the students understand it's not just somebody being violent. There are many other things that are leading up to that. And that's where the deeper learning takes place, is to understand, well, geez, they could have stopped this here, but they didn't. So, you know, and so you get to really kind of see that layered effect again. So I think that when we take history and we bring out that local history, we bring out that place-based education and students see their community, but most importantly for us, they see it on a national level. They realize that they are important, and there is tremendous agency in that, Larry, tremendous agency.
There sure is. There sure is about feeling good. Talk about, and you wanted me to ask you this, and you know we're the American Consortium for Equity in Education. We believe in access and opportunity for all kids, okay, and to give kids what they need, which is exactly what you're doing. You're giving, if I may just extrapolate this out, the kids of Eastern Kentucky, in this case, a reason to understand the importance of who they are and where they live, et cetera. It's that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And it is an equity thing. But just as you look through this, okay, and I bring up the word equity and access, if I may, okay, oddly the name of our magazine. When I say the word equity, and Kim or Desi, either way, you put it in context with what you're doing with all this, with Driving Force.
Well, I'll kind of start us there. And so much of what I say and think about this very much comes from the work that I do with Desi Bowling and with our current director, Jerry Green, but also most importantly with our former director, Jeff Hawkins. I think that when I think about that, it's, you know, Desi mentioned that this became an initiative for us about taking back our narrative. And what I sometimes do with our teachers as I talk about this, it's not even just a matter of taking it back, it's discovering it sometimes because our kids don't know these stories. But when you come into Eastern Kentucky and you realize, especially like St. Francis in the 1920s and 30s, as people came into this area to mine coal, you know, there were not enough people living here to do that and to make these companies very rich. So people had to come in not only from all over the country but all over the world. When you look, for instance, Harlan, when you look at the city of Lynch, and that was the first place that I really went into and did a place-based unit, an inquiry with a teacher over there by the name of Debbie Napier. When I came over there to work with that project, and we started working with community members to learn their stories and to discover those stories, as we got into that, we realized that at one time, in this one very small town, and if you look at it, it's maybe 3 miles long, maybe four tops. But you're talking, you had 10,000 people that lived in that community. So that's very, very heavily populated people were living
yep.
really close. Everybody knew each other's business, probably because they lived so close.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're talking
yeah.
over 55 different dialects and languages that were spoken
wow.
in that town, in that one little bitty town. So at one time, you know, Eastern Kentucky was very cosmopolitan. You know, we had lots of different restaurants and just like I said, languages, and not everyone looked the same and all of that. So when you think of that story and you go through and tell all of that story, like, for instance, in one of the oral histories that group did, and talking to this one gentleman, he tells a story of segregation in their community. And so we go into and we look at, and this was the name of the school, the Lynch Colored School. And they talk to people that live there, and they still have physical representations in their communities of, like, two doors going into a business. Well, we know what those two doors mean. So we're telling all of those stories. You know, and I think that component of it very much addresses equity. And let's just say this out loud too, Larry, and that is, if we are telling our stories of Eastern Kentucky, those are stories that have not been out there for almost 100 years or 150 years, because, you know, starting in the late 1800s, when you start seeing stories in, you know, the New York Times and those kind of places, you start seeing stories of, you know, the backwards hillbilly, the native who needs our help, you know, that whole kind of thing. You know, we had to go in, but in reality, we had a very rich and very diverse culture that people did not
mm-hmm.
talk about, because I think that there were other
motivations. Right.
You sometimes talk about that narrative of exploitation. Well, we don't have time. You and I can get together over, you know, lunch one day by phone and talk about that. But when you talk about those narratives, so I think that in telling our story, and again, I keep talking about this, humanizing that story, that's where you start, you know, really hearing everyone's voice. It's not just that one voice, which happens so often in our classroom sometimes, because, again, we're being held, you know, to an assessment and that kind of thing. But when you take the time to do inquiry and you take the time to bring in lots of primary sources, every voice, and that in and of itself is equity. You know, every voice is heard and every voice is represented. And I think in terms of access, for us, we figured this out, and I'm going to say right now, KVEC is central to that in this region. KVEC figured out a very long time ago, if you want to talk about access, you level the playing field with technology. You know, you bring that
absolutely.
In, everyone,
absolutely.
Yeah, everyone has access to all of the, you know, information, and there is tremendous empowerment in that as well. So for us, in supporting our teachers with, you know, increasing their comfort with technology and media literacy, we're teaching our students to be critical consumers of information, critical consumers of media, but most importantly, we're helping our teachers in developing that skill, which is going to really sharpen, you know, their pedagogy in the classroom.
It's terrific what you guys are doing, and your deep understanding of this, okay, is so, so darn important. I mean, it's just great what you've always done. I have to ask you, you said something earlier, and I didn't understand it. You said Jeff is the former director of KVEC? Did I hear that?
Yes.
Well, and Jeff had an opportunity to transition to a new role, and so he did. He's not left us completely, so I'll say that. But he's had an opportunity to make a transition, and so he has done that. And but he'll be working with us on initiatives and as we move forward, but just in a different capacity.
Well, I can't. I'll find out more about that as we go on. And we're talking about my friend Jeff Hawkins, who is the new director.
His name's Jerry Green, and he is a former superintendent from Pikeville Independent Schools. And so,
Well, I look forward to meeting Jerry. Okay, and it just when you said that, I'm thinking, did I miss something here? Okay, or something. Obviously, I did. But that's besides the point. I'll find out more about this. I can't wait to meet Jerry. Okay, it's good stuff. You know what you guys are doing and what you're doing with Driving Force Institute. It's so wonderful when two great organizations like KVEC and both friends of mine, I have to say, and Driving Force Institute get together and produce things that for my social studies background are incredibly important, and then B for my current work in equity. And I got to tell you, I'm just thrilled about this. And just keep it up, guys. You're just great. Kim, you're doing a great job, okay? And thank you so much. It's so nice to have you on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. I'd like to say that we are doing a great job because I'm sure
you can't
take something as massive as our new standards in Kentucky. I mean, I'm proud of the teachers, and I'm really proud that they are so very open to change because central to their mission is their students. And they know the world is changing, and they want to change with it so they can be there for their teachers. So it's we. It's never me.
it is a we, and you're just speaking for a lot of people there today, and I appreciate it and all the work that they're mm-hmm. doing. And, Desi, I didn't have a chance to do that at that point, but you're wonderful too, just in case you didn't know.
Yes, she
okay.
is. Well, thank you. Well, and yes. we appreciate you, Larry, and all your support.
It's mutual, I got to tell you. And let's both keep track of Pat, and I'll get him back on the show. I'll invite you guys
awesome.
As well to come. We'll all talk together, okay? Thank you both
Thanks.
Very much. Stay safe down
Thank
there,
you.
Okay? Keep that
you
mask
too.
On, all right? Thank
Absolutely.
You. Absolutely.
Thank
you. Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Kim Sargent, everybody, and Desi Bowling, two good friends from Kentucky Valley Educational Co-op, KVEC. Okay? And, boy, I wish every ESA in the country had the power that these guys have and the creativity. And Driving Force Institute, again, Pat couldn't be with us today. He will be with us in the future. Check it all out. They're both in our magazines. We'll be up on site today over at ace-ed.org, which is where we're going to archive this podcast. Thank you all for listening. Have a great day.